Welcome back. It's another episode of Laser Graves, a podcast about the 80s. I am your co-host, E.K. Wimmer.
Hi, E.K. Wimmer. That's a warm welcome. I'm your other co-host, Mariah Rose of the Wimmers.
I wanted to give a warm welcome because it's the wintertime.
It's
And I'm a
chilly.
Very considerate co-host.
Yes.
Cool.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
I feel toasty in this garage because of your warm welcome.
Good. Well, you know, I aim to please.
Thank you.
Speaking of aiming to please, this week's episode is awesome.
You aimed to please whom?
Myself.
Yep.
Like always. This is, you know what's funny in our household? This is considered a mainstream film.
For sure.
Because when we chose it earlier this week, we were like, oh, I guess we're going like with like a popular one.
I guess we're going like for the commoner.
Yeah, the average person. This week we're doing Killer Clowns from Outer Space.
We are. We've seen it 9,000 times.
Oh, easily. It's a fun one. It's going to be interesting to talk about because unlike some of the episodes where we've maybe seen it once or twice over the years or first time even, this is a way of life for our house. So.
Actually, you know, surprise, we're going to do a dramatic recreation from here on out. And go. No? Okay.
No. I wasn't following you. Sorry. Totally looked like a deer in headlights.
You did. Your smile.
I'm like, but I didn't take notes for that.
You did. You've been taking notes since you were almost born. Because your parents let you watch horror movies when you were a baby.
Yeah. I took notes before I was born. Because when I was born, it came out with a clipboard with recommendations for my mother to do a better job on raising me. I have bullet points.
I think you turned out just fine.
Yeah, well, I did watch this as a child, and that's part of the reason why I know this film so well.
Well, in defense of your mother, it was rated only PG-13.
It's true. A lot of these classics were PG-13, if not PG, which cracks me up.
Do you remember when we watched Logan's Run, and it was rated PG?
Oh,
and
yeah.
It's like naked humping and violence, and we were like...
Do you remember when we watched Beetlejuice and he just drops the F-bomb like a few times?
Yeah. That's fine until your kids look at you and go, what's that word?
Yeah, that was cool. Well, I'm glad they learned it from Beetlejuice.
True.
That's raising kids right.
Mm-hmm.
This week, you have any thrift store finds?
I do. I actually have two. So we have really high ceilings in our house and we've got these like beams. It's hard to describe architecturally. We have these open spaces that are up really high that I always want to decorate, but I don't have anything to put up there. So I started putting globes up there, and this week I found two vintage globes. But, like, one of them's boring, but the other one's real cool. It's got a huge metal, like, mid-century, like, holder, would you say?
Yeah, those things are expensive, man.
Yeah, I didn't spend anything on it because I got it at a thrift store, but... It was pretty rad. And then you chastised me for passing on something today, too.
Did I?
Yeah, like 10 minutes ago.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
There
I did.
Was a crystal frame with the most bodacious 80s babe in it.
Oh, she's a total babe.
She has like all white, and it's got that, I don't know, that softened light that the 80s did
it's
so
like a soft
very
box,
well.
Yeah.
But it's like a soft box, but with a soft box put on it.
Mm-hmm. Like she's dreamy.
Yeah. She is an 80s dream. Yep.
And she has a headband on.
But I didn't buy her because I'm not sure what I was thinking. And
I'm
honestly,
not sure what you're thinking too. I feel like we should swing back in the morning.
I'm sure we will.
Just to see if it's still there.
Just to go pick Tammy up and bring her home.
Her name's not Tammy.
Tammy.
She's a way cooler than a Tammy.
She's not. Did you have an 80s name you wanted? Because Tammy would have been on my list.
Nope.
I wanted Amy and Stacy and Tracy, 1, 2, 3, because I got Mariah, and that did not fit in. It didn't end with an I sound.
Yeah, the I and Y were big in the 80s, weren't they?
Amy, Stacy, Tracy, but Tammy would have been like 8 on my list of names, like Stephanie.
You know the name of the lead in the film we're going to discuss tonight?
Mm-hmm.
Debbie. There's another one.
Do you think it was with two E's? D-E-B-E-E?
No, I don't.
Debbie. Okay. All right. Well, whatever. So you didn't have a like name you wanted in the 80s?
Nope.
Okay. Well, then, boring. What's your first store find?
This week, I found a few cool VHS tapes. I found UHF with Weird Al Yankovic.
No, it's Oof.
Oof, yep.
Not to be confused with a French film about eggs called Oof.
Oof. Je ne sais quoi. So, and then there, I found Kids. Harmony Korine one.
Ooh, that's
it was a cool find. I found one you're going to be very excited about because we went to do this sequel for an episode and found out it was in the 90s and you were not happy.
What is it?
Well, we own Munchie.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
But today I found Munchies.
Wait, I thought we owned Munch. Wait, which comes first?
Munchies.
I feel like you should go singular then plural.
That's what we discussed last time.
Oh. Well, that's why I have no new information to add.
Because I knew Munchies was an 80s film. And I was like, well, clearly Munchie is before that.
Okay, so we can watch Munchies, but not Munchie is the second?
Munchie
is
like the
second. Not going to stick in my brain. I'm sorry.
And then I also found the David Lynch Presents Crumb, the documentary on the illustrator.
I remember being unsettled when I watched that.
Well, it's a, what's his name? Terry Zwigoff or whatever his name is.
Yeah,
his films are a little interesting.
It's a certain appetite for sure. Let's go with that.
And then non-VHS, I today found 1 through 14, a complete set of the Del Rey Return to or Wizard of Oz series, all 14 books, and they're really awesome. So,
are you going to start reading them?
Yeah, for sure. I'll work my way through them.
Do it to it.
Yeah. So those were my finds. Pretty good.
Congrats.
Solid,
congrats,
dude.
You got so much.
I did.
I just got globes.
So are you ready to get into this week's episode? Killer Clowns from Outer Space?
Yes. Okay. You're not letting me do it. But
no.
I'm gonna call up upon our listeners to sing Killer Clowns and then the Baby Shark song in your head, because that's all I'm doing.
Okay, but you're momming, assuming that everybody knows the Baby Shark
everybody
song.
Everybody does.
Okay, well, to be determined. But this does have a theme song, which it starts with, I love. I loved this era of 80s films when they had theme songs.
And they revisit it many times.
That's true, they do.
Is that the only thing they do in this?
No,
it's like an extended version and then remixes?
No. There's a...
No, you're
crazy. I'm
trying
to think of other films from the 80s that have theme songs. I guess the big one that comes to mind is Terrorvision has a really cool theme song, too.
How does that go?
I'm not going to sing it. We'll get sued. I'll do it in the Baby Shark version.
Well, this song does go, Killer Clowns.
No, it doesn't.
Yes, it does. It's like, he's like super bored as he sings Killer Clowns.
It's not true.
It's
at
like
all.
They go, say it. And he goes, Killer Clowns.
That is not what happens. I can't do this. Okay. Anyway, there's a really great theme song.
It's a bored singer.
Yeah. Okay.
Killer Clowns. Listen to it.
1988.
You'll see I'm 100% right.
Okay. 1988. This is when we get into it. This is directed by a troop of brothers.
A troop? How many?
Yeah. Three.
How many do you have to have a troop?
Three.
I feel like eight is the answer.
Nope. That's a team. It's a squad.
A gaggle.
So this was directed by Stephen Kyoto, and his two brothers produced, but also did like effects and helped write and stuff like that. Do you know these brothers at all?
Yeah, they're my best friends.
No, like other things they've done?
No.
They are responsible for a really fantastic franchise that we have yet to cover on this podcast.
Ooh, what?
Critters.
Oh, yeah, of course.
So they're the masterminds behind Critters.
We haven't done Critters yet?
No, we haven't. So this was directed by Stephen Kyoto. It looks like Chiodo, by the way.
I remember seeing it.
But it's not. It's Kyoto, and how I know that.
How do you know this?
Well, because Mick Garris, who directed Critters 2, did a like anniversary podcast where he interviewed them, and he introduces them as the Kyoto brothers. And I'm going to go ahead and say he probably knows how to say their name correctly.
Wouldn't it be funny, though, if he had just mispronounced it and they were and too they polite to anything. Correct him?
Oh, that's what I do constantly. Do you remember at my current position that I'm about to leave, that for almost a year, I had a coworker that I
Oh, you got to tell this full story. It's such a good one.
Saw her daily. And at first, she called me by my real name.
Uh-huh.
And then about 2 months into my job, she started calling me, what was it, Steve? And I thought it was hilarious, and I never told her that my name was not Steve.
Yep.
So I just started responding to it, and I'd be like, hey. So she just called me Steve every single day for months and months until one day I had to put in some, like, IT order for a computer, and her coworker like just referred to me normal,
and I called you by your name.
Yes. And I saw this moment of like confusion and panic on her face. And then nothing was said, and the very next day she just started calling me by my normal name again.
Yes, but only for a while.
Yeah, it was awesome. Well, speaking of Steve, Stephen Kyoto directed this. So
it all ties in.
There we go.
So we open on a burger joint, and there's a cop, Officer Mooney, who does something that troubles me from minute one of
What's
this
that?
Movie. He has, first of all, he's at a drive-thru, I don't know what you'd call it, like a Sonic style where you pull in your car.
Mm-hmm.
He has a mug, a ceramic mug of coffee, and I don't know if he brought this mug and had them fill it with coffee or if he just stole it from this establishment, but he's taking it, he drinks out of it, and then he sets it on his dashboard.
Okay.
And I was extremely troubled by this, but then it disappears.
So, okay, what part of the story troubled you? Was it the mug, the coffee,
so
or the
parts.
Dashboard?
First of all, okay. Was it stolen by this police officer? Secondly, who puts their mug on a dashboard? It doesn't have a lid.
A police officer.
What if he breaks hard or even gently? Yeah. It tips over and there's coffee everywhere. That's a stupid move. And then finally, where does it go?
I don't know.
Where does it go? Tell me.
I'm glad that you chose to open up with this reading of the film. Stick with us, everyone. You know what I did notice right at the beginning is there's an old school Goodwill in the background. Did you
really?
See that?
Yeah. Your thrifter vision.
Oh, yeah. Thrifter vision for sure. It
thrift
was awesome.
Thrift senses tingling.
Yeah.
And then it takes us to a makeout park, which is the most bizarre part after the coffee, because it's a bunch of like 25-year-olds at a park making out.
Totally. Which we saw like... in the parking lot of that coffee shop the other day, do you remember? They were like sincerely in their mid-20s and they were just making out nonstop.
Just rubbing butt cheeks. That was awkward.
So awkward.
But it was just one weird couple. This was a circle in the movie. There's a circle of cars parked. All people who have clearly, like we know Debbie has her own apartment, but they have decided, they're all adults with jobs, who have taken the vehicles that I assume they're paying for themselves to a place to make out with each other next to each other.
They're, you know what, though? This is where age comes into play. Like, they're good at this because one of them has a blow-up, like, raft in the
back. Smart.
That is really smart. That is, teens would not have thought of that. This comes with age and wisdom.
Although, I will say that it would be smarter to, like, go to your own apartment.
Yeah, you would think. Especially because none of them are in relationships. They're dating each other. So it's not like, where can we go?
Nah. What?
Why? I don't know. I feel like this was kind of like a community building event.
Ew, no.
Like, we're all in it together.
Gross.
Because they all knew each other.
No.
But then we get interrupted by the ice cream vendor. These two knuckleheads that come cruising up in their ice cream truck trying to sell ice cream, and everybody's like throws trash at him and tells him to go away. They're the comic relief throughout the whole film.
Okay.
They are.
That's overselling it, but okay.
They were actual comedians, like in California at this time. Yeah, they were like established comedians.
Okay.
It was a different time, man.
It really was.
That type of humor was funny back then.
We've also set the bar at adults making out together.
That's true.
As a group.
So this next scene, I was trying to think how many films now have we covered that the premise starts this way with a comet shooting through the sky and crashing. Can you name them?
No.
I can think of two. I feel like three.
Night of the Comet.
Night of the Comet, for sure.
This one.
We did... Alien Space Avenger.
Oh, yep. Oh, the vampire one with Tracy Lord.
Oh, yeah, Not of This Earth.
Yes.
Yeah, we've done three. This is our fourth film
with a comet. That we can think of.
Starting the premise of the film. We kind of have a knack for that. That must be like our thing.
Maybe you should become a filmmaker and every single film you make is... opening scene, doesn't matter what happens next, comet.
I'd like to keep the scene from Alien Space Avenger where not only is it the comet, but then you have to pee on your shoes as you look up at the comet in the sky.
Yes, I like this.
So the comet goes through the sky.
It's like a big flash of light.
And they're like, we should go check it out, which is, of course they should.
Not all of the couples, only Debbie and Mike.
Yeah, but we cut to who does check it out. Do you recognize him?
Yeah, Royal Dano, dude.
Royal Dano makes a comeback on our podcast.
He plays like a full-fledged, like, hillbilly?
He's like a farmer.
Okay, he's got a hunting dog, like a bloodhound, and he's got a weird, like, deep south accent, maybe?
His hound is adorable.
Oh, what was that dog's name?
Pooh Bear.
Pooh Bear, yes.
Yeah, man.
So he and... Pooh Bear go to check it out, as do Mike and Debbie, although Royal Dano and Pooh Bear are ahead. So they arrive at the site of where this comet landed. And he thinks it's Halley's Comet for some reason. And he thinks he's going to, like, scoop it up.
I don't know. But you know what? As far as, like, 80s actors go that are well-known, like cult actors... You know, like, we're totally obsessed with, like, Clint Howard because he makes snow globes. But
yeah.
The big one is, like, Tom Atkins from, like, Night of the Creeps and Halloween and stuff like that. Tom Atkins is a big one. But I think Royal Dano, for me, is, like...
Yeah.
You know, between this and... What else was he in? Ghoulies 2. House 2 is the biggest one. Gramps.
That's for you.
I think Royal Dano is kind of my guy for the 80s, like, cult dude.
Yeah.
I love him.
Also, the guy who plays Dave in this movie is in every movie ever made. So, look for him. Yep.
Okay.
He has 1 billion film credits.
Well, Royal Dano is really excited... Goes over to check it out.
Yep. And he finds a circus tent. And he thinks like, what am I going to do? He starts circling the circus tent. And then Pooh Bear, who's maybe a little more astute than Royal Dano, like, starts sniffing around a certain spot. And he is caught in a net.
Yes.
By a clown who appears out of the circus tent, and Royal Dano comes back and throws a fit about his dog, which actually kind of broke my heart.
He says, where's my dog? Where's my Pooh Bear?
Exactly how I would feel. And he's taken too.
This is when we first see one of the clowns.
Yes.
That looks amazing.
The clowns in this are really scary.
They're really well done, too. You know, I was reading about the budget and stuff like that, and they did not spend a lot of money on the actual clowns, which you would think would be where the money was, because the brothers crafted, you know, they made these masks out of foam and stuff like that.
They made them themselves?
Yeah.
Weird.
And then what they did was they had two different versions. They had one that could be worn by the actor, but then for the close-ups, they had the animatronics in it to do all the facial expressions.
That's cool.
Dude, this is so well done. I mean, we'll get into it for the rest of the film, but my honest impressions are just the creatures and the practical effects are so much fun in this. And the clowns, every single clown holds up throughout this whole
movie. Yeah, they're all really good.
This is kind of like take note for people who are making low budget films.
Yeah, I would agree.
And this was real low budget. I mean, this was like, I think top was $2 million. That's not a lot of money for a film like this, because there's a lot happening.
There really is. Although I think it was kind of clever, and, you know, we can kind of touch on this as we go, but it was smart to use these like circus tent funhouse things, because they could have a lot of negative space, just blackness, and then some like really cool cutouts, like vibrant colors. Like, it was really creative problem solving for a tight budget.
The set designs in this were fantastic, yeah, too. They remind me kind of like that Dr. Caligari feel, where they're, you know, the strange angles and the funhouse kind of feel. But it's also clear that it didn't take hardly any money to make these sets, but they look
just like a clever craftsmanship. And
yeah, this is like how you work on a budget, for sure.
And then, so after Dano and Pooh Bear are taken, we flash to the police department, where Mooney is bringing in some punks who had a bottle of wine. And the only purpose this really serves is to develop that Mooney's kind of a jerk.
Kind of?
Anybody who puts a coffee in a ceramic mug on their dashboard's obviously a jerk. But
I do love that the punks, one of them is so respectful when he's explaining that they were having he was like, you know, we were just enjoying a bottle of wine.
It's a beautiful night. Yes. It was some, like, goths out, like, in the moonlight having a glass of wine.
Which was me. Every time I got busted by the cops as a teen, I was always super respectful. That's why I never really got taken in. Like, couple times I got taken in, but I didn't get in serious trouble, because I was always super respectful. Like, I looked like a hot mess, you know, gothed and punked out, but I was always spoke to them really calmly and nicely. Mm-hmm. This is how you do it. This is, you're just enjoying this nice evening with a bottle of wine.
There you go. And then we flash back to Debbie and Mike, who have finally caught up to Dano, because they find the circus tent. And they start looking around, but Debbie is the smart one in this bunch, because she's like, I have a weird feeling, let's go. And Mike's like, no, don't listen to your gut, let's continue forward. So he leads her into the circus tent, and she's like, dude, how far do we have to go in here? And he's like, all the way, baby. And she follows him into this tent, like deeper and deeper into the circus tent, which maybe it's a metaphor, but they go inside and discover, nope, it's not a circus tent, that there are dead bodies. They find out the whole heart of this problem here, that it's an alien spaceship, and that these clowns are, in fact, wrapping people in cotton candy to preserve them, maybe?
This was incredible. Well, the first time I saw this film, I still think it's amazing, but the cotton candy cocoons that they put people in.
So creepy.
It looks so amazing.
It's brilliant, too, as far as problem solving goes, because it's an easy thing to make, like, as a prop.
Yeah.
But it looks so convincing.
It looks so good. Yes. This is, did you recognize Debbie, by the way?
I did recognize her, but I couldn't place her.
She's been in a few things you would know. The big, big one is Weird Science.
Yes.
But she was also in Return of the Living Dead and Night of the Creeps.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah, I like Deb.
Yeah, she's great. And if you see her face, you'll go, oh, yeah, I know that face.
This tent spaceship scene was incredible. It's so good. But then the clowns are kind of like on the hunt, because they escape. They get out from that spaceship.
Mm-hmm.
And the clowns, I wanted to talk about this scene because I love it. Is they have a little hunting dog to sniff them out.
Yes. Oh, and before that, we should also mention, like, when the clowns discover Mike and Debbie, they shoot them with a gun that shoots popcorn, but the popcorn sticks to them.
Yeah.
It's important because it will come back into the story in a little bit. And then, yes, they have a balloon hunting dog.
One of the clowns makes a balloon dog, mm-hmm, and then puts it on a leash, and it's like, rawr, 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 and runs after him.
Yes.
So clever.
It's so cute, too. I wish that I had that.
Yeah. And then the clowns decide to follow them into town.
Yes.
So mayhem can kind of commence.
Yeah. Would anything have happened if Debbie and Mike hadn't been such nosy Nellies?
I don't know, but the music here is so good.
Is it?
The composer was John Mazzari. He's done a bunch of stuff, but I just thought he did a fantastic job. The score of this whole film is iconic, really.
Oh, like, yeah.
You can't separate the two.
Perfect. Yeah,
it's incredible. But this is when the clowns all go into town. And this is, I love the way the pacing of this film is perfect because it just pushes forward.
Yeah, every scene is pretty well contained and you feel like you're moving ahead at all times. So the clowns slowly follow them and they kind of booty walk because they have big clown butts.
Yeah, the costumes are amazing.
It's fantastic. And then Debbie and Mike immediately head to the police department because in the cotton candy they'd found bodies of people they recognized, I guess. And so they head straight to the police department to tell Officer Dave. And Officer Dave definitely would like some more information. I mean, fair enough if somebody comes in and is like, spaceship, clown, cotton candy, corpse. You
and
go.
Dave, we find out that Dave and Deb used to be an item.
Yes.
And Mooney is not having any part of this story. So he's just ripping on Dave the whole time. Like, you're going to believe this nonsense. Ha, ha, ha.
Yes.
And then he looks over and realizes that he recognizes Mike and as a troublemaker. And he's like, I know you, you little fart.
How many times have you wanted to call somebody a little fart in your life?
I just think the use of fart is great. This is, okay, between Killer Clown saying, you little fart, between the grandpa in Lost Boys having the ice chest for his beer that says old fart, and then obviously Royal Dano in House 2 saying, I'm a 170-year-old fart. I just think the use of fart in 80s horror is fantastic.
It really is. Let's bring it back.
Okay.
Let's just insult random people calling them farts.
I do have a pretty awesome hat sitting right there. Do you see what it says?
Old fart.
Old fart.
Old fart. It's getting more true of you the longer I know you.
I'm owning it.
Okay, so the clowns begin creatively capturing everyone in town. They just go around town, door to door, coming up with weird clown shticks to capture people here and there.
Yeah, like delivering pizza and stuff like that.
Yeah, and then Debbie and Dave are revealed to be a couple now, and he decides to drive her home while he and Mike are going to go investigate this spaceship business. So Dave and Mike decide to buddy up in the weirdest... Isn't this kind of weird? Like, you're writing a film and you're like, let's go with a girl, her boyfriend, her ex-boyfriend, cop, fighting killer clowns.
I kind of like it, though.
I do, too, because it's so outside of the box. Because it's a weird pairing. And they all get along, and spoiler alert, Debbie and the cop Dave don't get back together. Everybody's fine. It's like a weird relationship that develops over the course of this film, which is, not like they're breaking new cinematic ground, but it is cool to see something a little bit different. So Dave and Mike go to inspect the site of this spaceship while Debbie goes home to shower, I guess. Mm-hmm. I don't really know.
That shower scene
is very
drags on for a long time.
So
and it's
much.
Not like you don't see anything, so it's not like, okay, well, this is why it's dragging on.
Yeah.
It's just long.
Yeah, it does. It could be like 4 seconds, but
it could have been,
so many minutes. Then Mike and Dave go looking for the spaceship big top tent and don't find it. It's gone. And Dave overreacts and decides he's going to arrest Mike for like being naughty and telling lies about dead people and cotton candy. I don't really know why
he just thinks he's a menace and he handcuffs him.
And this is when we get to the bike gang. Do you want to talk us through the bike gang?
The bike gang is awesome. So there's this classic like 80s biker gang hanging out in the alley. And then one of the clowns comes up on the little clown bicycle, you know, Saw style, right? And it comes up and they're like, oh, look at your cute, you know, bike. And then one of the biker bullies picks up the bike and crashes it and destroys it.
That's mean.
It was really mean and aggressive. But then the clown decides to put up his dukes and has like little boxing gloves. And
they come flying out of the sky.
Yeah, they're all laughing at him. And then he's like, take your best shot. And he knocks his head off like Jason Takes Manhattan style. Like,
yes.
takes
his
head off.
Punches it off.
Yeah, and it knocks off. And they all freak out and drive off. And I just think this This whole scene is hilarious.
It is. And it's weird, too, because the clown says, like, put up your dukes without actually saying put up your dukes, because the clowns never actually speak.
Yeah, it's like a Charlie Chaplin style.
But he's like, but no, he makes, like, weird beeping sounds or, like, bow, 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 bow. And you just understand it as put up your dukes.
Yeah, I mean, it made perfect sense to me.
Yep. Yep, that's how it goes.
After that, one of the scenes that's kind of interesting is the Big Top Burger scene.
Mm-hmm.
Where
restaurant?
Yeah, there's this little girl sitting in the restaurant, and she looks out the window, and there's this creepy clown, like, calling her over.
Like, gesturing with his finger.
It was really interesting. So, I read an interview with the director, Stephen Kyoto, and he was saying the reason why he wrote this scene in is because children... Our relationship with clowns is really fascinating, and that children immediately trust clowns until they see them up close and then realize that they're not kind of who they appear to be. And I liked that idea because it's true. Like, when you see a clown on the surface, it's real like, okay, it's fun.
They're here for fun.
But if you've ever stood like face to face to a person dressed as a clown, it's really disturbing and awkward. Yes. I say that from experience.
Tell us your experience, Eric.
Well, it's sweet at the same time because my mother used to dress up as a clown and visit like old folks' homes to cheer them up. So they'd go in and like cheer them up that way. It'd be like a group of people dressed as clowns. This was the 80s. And I got sucked into that world. So I, for some time...
that world.
It was
the
weird.
World of clowning.
That for some time, I had my own little costume and my own makeup that was unique to me, and I dressed as a clown. And it was weird, though.
Where did that go? Where's your costume?
I don't even know if I have a single photo of me in my clown costume. Ugh. I should find one.
Yeah.
But it was weird, because there would be moments where, like, we're all standing in, like, a nursing home, and I would look at these people who I didn't know, and I've never seen them outside of makeup. And it was just disturbing and weird.
Yeah.
So I like the scene because the clown's calling her over and she's like, okay. And she almost goes out.
Mm-hmm.
And the director was just saying how like children inherently trust a clown until they're kind of put in a position to realize that these are untrustworthy people.
They're people who are hiding behind a mask, or not necessarily hiding, but yeah, there's something. Why are you covering up your face, weirdo?
Yeah.
And our youngest daughter has always been afraid of clowns for that reason. She was able to articulate that at a very young age. And I recently was at a birthday party with an adult human dressed as a clown. And it was, as opposed to a goat or something, I don't know. An adult dressed as a clown, and it was very creepy. It was a stranger to me. They had been hired, and it was very creepy.
Yeah, it's really interesting, and I like that this film plays on all that.
Yes, I agree.
This is when you think of clown movies beyond, like, you know, the big ones like It and stuff. I think of Killer Clowns because this is just, it's just totally the point is that they're weird.
Yeah, and from a distance, they do look playful, but as you see up close, they did a really good job making their faces very creepy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, exaggerated, even for a clown's face.
And they're goofing off around town, but this is where we get to the best scene of the whole movie, in my opinion.
What's that?
So, Dave and, what's his face?
Mike's
been handcuffed now, and they're cruising around town, and then they come upon a scene where a clown is out in an alleyway at night, and he's doing hand puppets, like shadow puppets, on the wall to a group of bystanders, like waiting for the bus or something, and they're watching, and at first it's like, you know, a ballerina, and then it gets more absurd. It's like George Washington in the crossing of the Delaware. I mean, I read that too. The director was like, one of the brothers thought, wouldn't that be funny?
It was funny.
And they pulled it off and they all thought it was hilarious.
Yes.
But then it goes into like a Tyrannosaurus Rex and then eats the people. And this whole scene is, it for me anyway, because I just grew up on this film, iconic. Like, I loved this scene as a child. And it still holds up today as being, like, just so incredibly unique and original.
I'm sorry, did you say that the brothers also wrote this?
Yeah, they all wrote it. One of them directed it.
Okay.
And then they did the effects. They produced it. It just, they all kind of teamed up together.
Yeah. I like to think about a bunch of brothers sitting around writing this.
Yeah, and it's really cool. Imagine. But this scene is just incredible.
It's so
this
good.
Is when Dave sees that, and then he's like, oh, you're, yes. like, you're telling the truth.
Yeah, he finally is, like, in the loop.
And he unhandcuffs him. And as you were talking about earlier with the development of this relationship, they didn't need to do this for a cheesy horror, and I appreciate that they did, because there's the actual depth to this.
Well.
Really? No, there is, because there's a brief scene where they're driving away, and he apologizes. The sheriff, yeah. who's this, like, you know, tough guy, jock guy, he's like, look, I'm sorry that I did that. And I just thought that was a weird scene to keep in, because they yeah. didn't need to, but it actually gave, like... You're rooting for them now because they're
yeah,
like...
Yeah,
because
they're buddies. Yeah, they're becoming buds.
Yeah, they realize, look, maybe we didn't get off to the best start, but we're in this together. And I just, I think that's fantastic.
So after that, we go back to Debbie, who right. is in her forever shower.
Yes.
The popcorn that had been shot onto her clothes in one of those early scenes with the clowns now begins climbing off of her clothes while she's in the shower. So she's totally oblivious that the popcorn's on the move. And still, we don't get to know, because we have to wait for many more scenes to pass before the shower is over. So yeah. keep in mind, too, that she's been in the shower this whole time, and she'll continue to be in the shower until we let you know that she's out of the yeah. shower.
It's true. That's half the movie she's
like,
in the shower.
Lady, take a bath.
I do like this popcorn idea.
Yes.
The, like, little crawly popcorns. I think it's really fun.
Yeah, and then we go back while the... Because popcorn takes a while to get where it's going if sure. it's going to crawl there. So we go back. Mooney has been refusing to call the state police. He thinks that Dave is paranoid.
Well, at this point, Mooney's in the police station. He's refusing to do his job as a cop. He's like, the phones are ringing, going off the hook, and he doesn't want any part of it. And then this is... We'll go to the scene where the clown walks in to the police station. He's like, oh, wise guy kind of thing. And the clown comes in and shoots, like Joker style, water into the face of Mooney. And it pisses him off. So then later, Dave comes into the police station. And there's, like, cotton candy everywhere. Mm-hmm. And there's these, like, footprints cut out
like
of...
Like, gigantic clown footprints.
Yeah, and he's looking around. And he sees that two of the guys in the cell have been put into cotton candy. Like, the arm falls out. It's really
yeah,
creepy,
like,
actually.
In cotton candy cocoons. But they're stuck up against the wall, which is... Does that not make sense to you? Because they're supposed to be collecting them.
Yeah, I think they're going to come back for him.
Okay.
But then he walks out into the main room, and this scene is actually scary.
It like, is.
This
yeah.
is when it's a true horror film. I think this is well done. Yeah. Really well done. Is... Mooney is standing there, or like sitting behind
his
desk, and he's got these little kind of rosy cheeks, and the clown is standing, like sitting beside him also, and Mooney's talking to him, and he does this weird thing where he like leans forward as he's talking.
Yeah.
It's just really disturbing.
And he has two lines out of the corner of each of his mouth going down toward his chin, so he looks like a ventriloquist dummy.
Yeah. And then we find out that the clown pulls his hand out of his back and like flings the blood on the ground and pushes him over, and he had been using him as a dummy.
Mm-hmm.
This scene is creepy.
It's very creepy because he was using talking in his voice.
It's so well done. And then he stands up and he's about to come at Dave, but Dave shoots him in the nose and it shatters.
Right before he drops Mooney down, he says, "Don't worry, Dave. All we want to do is kill you."
Oh, yeah. That is really creepy.
Isn't that so scary? Because that's the whole motive. That's their only purpose for being here.
Is this also the only time that they speak?
But they only speak through Mooney.
Right.
No, because later one of them talks to Debbie in Dave or Mike's voice.
Oh, remember? That's right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, yeah, they tell him they want to kill him and then throw down Mooney's body, the ventriloquist body. Mm-hmm. And then stand up, and Dave freaks out, takes his gun out, shoots, and hits him in the nose. And it, like, blows up into confetti.
Yeah.
And the clown gets destroyed. And this is when they realize, this is when Dave realizes that's, the way to destroy yeah. him is to shoot him in the nose.
Yeah, that's their kill ticket. So then Mike and the ice cream guys. Oh, yeah. So Dave was just in there. Mike is out. He's with the ice cream brothers or friends. And they come across the clowns who are gathering bodies. They have like a giant clown-like car that has like a vacuum feature. I don't know. And then they're sucking up all of the cotton candy cocoons to take with them. So they see this, they witness it. So it kind of explains how all of these cotton candy bodies are being moved away. And so finally we come back to Debbie in her shower. She's
very clean now.
She is now clean. And the popcorn, meanwhile, which honestly they had a small eternity to transform, they have gathered in, what is it, the sink, a hamper, and the toilet?
Yeah, I think that's what they did.
And each kernel of popcorn is now like a spine with a clown face at the end of it.
They're really weird. The premise behind this, their influence from what they said was some Japanese film and then also Alien, like the creature jumping out of the chest. They wanted it to be that kind of scare. It works to a degree, but it also looks like props on a string being dangled. But they're fun. It's a really fun scene.
And she escapes from the spine clowns. And she's trying to run out of her house. But she gets to her front door and she hears one of them calling, like Mike or Dave calling to her. And so she opens the door. But it's a clown at the front door. And these clowns, we should also say, are enormous. They're like seven feet tall or something.
They're very imposing, yeah.
And so she opens the door, and it's one of the clowns talking in either Mike or Dave's voice. And she slams the door and locks it. And then she runs to a window to make her escape. But beneath the window is a bunch of clowns holding like a small, I don't know, like a trampoline kind of thing. Like they're going to catch her if she jumps out the window.
It's a cool scene.
Yeah. But eventually they do capture her and they put her into a big, like, inflatable ball.
It's a balloon. It's really cool.
Yeah. It's like a balloon and she's in it and they put her onto it and it's hanging behind a string or like a stick behind the clown car as Mike and Dave pull up because they've finally come to get her after her eternal shower.
Well, it's not Mike and Dave. It's just
Mike and the ice cream brothers.
And the ice cream brothers hamming it up and they see what's happening and they're like, go,
get her.
You know, go after her. We got to get her. And so they speed off after her. And as the clown car passes by and then the ice cream truck quickly after, Dave sees this in his cop car and flips on his lights and starts chasing him after.
Yes.
And so they're all now, like, two of them are chasing after the clowns trying to get to him.
Mm-hmm.
And then at one point, one of the brothers in the ice cream truck is like, there's a cop after us. We have to stop, and slams on the brakes. And what ends up happening is Dave smashes his cop car into the back of the ice cream truck. And so now they're all together.
They all have to ride in the ice cream truck.
It's kind of a clever way to get the whole group together.
Like a little buddy film.
And they end up going to this amusement park.
Yeah, which it doesn't really ever explain why suddenly their spaceship is at the amusement park?
Yeah, I don't know. They landed there, though, and I'm not going to complain because I'm a fan of amusement parks in movies. I think they're fun. But they pull up in this clown car and do the classic like clown scene where they all get out of the clown car.
Yes, and it's a security guard watching.
Yeah, there's
watching.
A security guard. And then they all pull out a pie. And there's this great moment where the security guard goes, what are you going to do with those pies, boys? And then they all throw them at him and cover him in pie, and it ends up melting him down to a skeleton?
Yes.
It's so awesome.
And then the smallest clown comes and puts an enormous cherry on top of the corpse pie pile.
Yeah. So Mike and Dave get there. They're looking around for Debbie. They go into the ship. You know, this set, again, is just through the roof awesome. Great set design. And then the clown costumes, too. This is when I was just... Because we start to see a lot of clowns.
Yeah, you only have an idea prior to this that there's, like, five or six clowns. And we learned that there's a lot more than five or six.
Which I really have a large appreciation for with filmmakers. Because this, you could have just been like, let's make two or three really awesome costumes. But they went all out.
There's
and
a
all
lot.
Of them are totally unique, too. They look incredible.
So they're all there to rescue Debbie, but the ice cream guys fall down, like, I don't know, like a surprise trap door and hook up with some sexy lady clowns.
Yeah, that's a funny 80s scene.
It's never fully explained, but they're sitting in a ball pit and two like sexy lady clowns who have like inflatable breasts. Like you don't see their breasts, but they're wearing like weird clown clothes and it just inflates on their chest. So that happens, but they're cool with it. And Mike and Dave continue on searching for Debbie. And they witness, and so they go into the spot where originally Mike and Debbie had seen all of these dangling chrysalis cocoon things of cotton candy. And they're looking for the ball with Debbie because there are several of these balloon ball things. And they're not finding her. They're not finding her. And they have to hide from a clown. Remember, he comes out, this creepy,
cool
like,
scene. Yeah.
Fat, crazy clown. And he uses a crazy straw. He first, like, taps on them. That's a creepy scene. Like, he's checking if they're ripe.
I feel like this film is, for the people who know it, I feel like it's underrated for the horror that it actually
is. Yeah, it's low-key
scary. This is actually
a
scary movie. Like, there are some disturbing scenes in here. But I think because of
the
facade of being so funny and goofy and stuff, that you lose the fact that when it's supposed to be scary, I think it's truly scary.
Yeah, I agree.
So this is one of those scenes. This one and the police station scene is very scary. But this one is creepy. He pulls out this crazy straw with all these bends and loops and stuff. Sticks it in one of the pieces of cotton candy cocoons and starts sucking the blood out.
Sips away.
So
are they like
awesome
clown vampire aliens?
Are we doing it again?
Oh, more vampires from space.
Alien vampires.
Okay, these ones are just under the guise of clowns. But after this, they do find Debbie and break her out of her balloon, and she starts hyperventilating like she couldn't breathe. But she's been in that balloon for upside of 2 hours, so she would be dead if she couldn't breathe.
Fine.
Whatever.
Yeah.
And
she's a drama queen.
They decide to make their break for it, and they're basically just running around a fun house at this point. Just lots of running, and not my favorite, but one of the best parts is they find a door to escape through, and they open it. Or Mike opens it, and he's like, another door. And then he opens it, and he goes, another door. And he opens it, another door. He does it so many times, but he has to announce that there's another door after every single door.
It's so great. You know what I was wondering? This is going to be a stretch, and for our listeners, they're going to be like, what are you even talking about right now?
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if the creators of Dude, Where's My Car watched this film and liked it. Because there's a couple scenes. The brothers that drive the ice cream truck, they like get each other in headlocks and wrestle around a lot.
Okay.
Like the guys from Dude, Where's My Car. But then this another door scene.
And then.
And then. No, and then. And then.
Sure.
No, and then. I just feel like there were some similarities there. I'm gonna be the one on record to make this
connection. You're for sure right.
You heard it here first.
So they break through the last of the doors. It's a small one. And they come into this big room. It's like the final room, you can tell. And the clowns start pouring out. There's so many clowns. And Mike, Debbie, and Dave climb up what looks like a pile of presents, kind of, onto a platform as they're fighting off all of these clowns that are coming after them. And then right at the, final moment, the ice cream truck comes breaking through. And apparently now part of this spaceship is made out of bricks because a bunch of bricks come flying in.
Too.
Whatever. But the ice cream guys provide enough of a distraction and they are about to all escape with the ice cream brothers. And then what I refer to as the King Clown comes in.
Yeah, I think he was referred to as Clownzilla on
set. Ooh, I like
it. I think so.
Okay.
He's like this huge monster clown that comes down. And the music that's playing is really cool. And there's actually a fun fact to that music. The composer, John, did the music that's playing.
Mm-hmm.
He had originally done that music for the trailer for Friday the 13th Part 6.
Oh, weird.
And it got rejected for more, mainstream music.
Okay.
And so they were like, awesome, let's just use this theme for this scene right here. And
that's
what was used. It's really cool.
Yeah, so he comes down and he's like a clown, but also a clown marionette.
Yeah.
And it's creepy. He moves slow like he's underwater, and he's ginormous.
I think that may be Stephen Kyoto to the director. That it's one of the brothers is in that costume.
Oh, really?
As the Clownzilla.
That's cool. And he comes down and he breaks the top of the ice cream truck. He pummels it because there's a clown face on top of it.
Right.
He pummels it down. And they have to abandon ship, basically, because the truck explodes. But the two brothers, it would appear, are still... Or the two ice cream guys are in the truck as it explodes, it would appear. And so it's like the final showdown now. Mike and Debbie run for it. And Dave is like, I'll do this. I will save you.
Yeah, he's going to be the savior.
He's the hero. Which, cool. Because
yeah, good for him.
He's not with Debbie.
Yeah. What has he got going
on? Yeah. And then, so the spaceship, the big top spaceship starts up. And Dave is there facing it down with a clown. The big clown picks him up in his hands, which is so cool.
Oh, yeah, it's
cool.
Like King Kong style. It's awesome.
Oh, that's why they called him Clownzilla. I get it. I mean, not the... Okay. Whatever. So the police are now finally like, oh, okay, like the state PD starts to arrive. And then did this occur to you? This is the first time this has ever occurred to me. So the spaceship, which is like a circus tent, rises up out of the ground and it starts spinning. And I realized it's a big top, like the circus is a big top, but it's also a big top, like a spinning top. Yeah, you knew that?
Yeah.
It just occurred to me. I was like, it's a big top.
I always assumed that's why it went so far down into the ground, like when they were inside of it.
Yeah.
And because it left this like crater mark where it would be.
And then up in the inside the big top, as it's starting to make its escape, Dave pops the giant clown's nose.
Yeah, he uses his police badge.
Yeah, like the needle on the badge.
Pops the nose, destroys him, saves the day. There's this massive explosion, and you think everybody's died. Dave and the goofy ice cream brothers, everything. But then the clown car crashes onto the ground.
Yes.
And they get out. Which is really funny because the original ending was Dave did die.
Oh.
He died saving them, but they wanted to have like a happier
ending.
So they let him just survive in the clown car, which I'm a fan of.
Cream guys.
Yeah.
They all survived.
Everybody survived, which is going to lead into current news. Rumor is that they're going to finally do a follow-up to this.
What?
No jokes. We'll see if it happens. But it's basically going to have, like, the whole cast.
Oh, that would be amazing.
Yeah.
And also, as this is ending, there's confetti falling from the sky from the explosion. And then they all get pelted with pie. Here's my question. It's like a comedic ending. But we know the pies turn people to skeletons, but they're fine with it.
I've always wondered that.
Okay.
If it's like, it's acid pie, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Whatever.
Okay. These pies were not.
Minor pies in the sky.
Okay.
Well, that's Killer Clowns from Outer Space. Man, I just love this movie so much.
Oh, it's a great movie.
I can't even imagine how many times I've seen it. We watched this on my copy of VHS. I do not have... So I have the Midnight Movies version, which is like a later release. I have a top tier, like, movies I want to own on VHS. And after I got... My top two were Eraserhead and Chopping Mall. After I got those, number three on the list is the original media copy of Killer Clowns. And I still don't have it.
Oh.
But man, one day we're going to own this original copy too. And funny enough, timely because of how we started this, the one right after that would be the original Terrorvision, the Lightning video.
Oh.
So those are the big ones I'm still after. But we have this one. I had this film growing up. My buddy and I, as kids, we watched this. I mean... Every other day after school, we'd watch Killer Clowns. We went through a phase, so I'd say I probably watched it. I can't even imagine how many times I watched it. It was films like this and Goonies and Escape from New York. I was in this period of time as a child where I watched them religiously because I didn't have cable TV. So it was like I just watched him and memorized the lines and everything like that. And Killer Clowns was one of the very few films that I watched over and over and over and over again because it was awesome. I loved the music. You know, the soundtrack's fantastic.
The designs
are fantastic. Everything about this is cool.
I think also with the name Killer Clowns from Outer Space, you don't expect anything but what you get. So you can't be let down. You went into this movie knowing it's called Killer Clowns with a K.
Yeah.
From Outer Space. You're going to get what you ask for, and they deliver majorly.
This is a solid film. I've never met somebody who... If you diss on this film, you're just trying to get attention, I guess.
Well, either that or it's just super not your thing.
This is such a great film.
It is.
If you don't like it, get out of here. I don't have time for you. This is Laser Graves approved, 100%. If you've not seen it, you must watch it because it is so fun. It's everything that's great about 80s horror.
But don't let your children watch it.
Well, it is PG-13. Okay.
Gosh.
Well, that's our episode this week. I hope you enjoyed it. As always, if you liked it, please rate and review. Thank you to people who have been rating and leaving reviews on iTunes.
Yeah,
that really
helps.
Subscribe. We're anywhere you get your podcasts is where we're at. And then if you want to follow us, we're on Instagram at Laser Graves. My personal site on Instagram is Death at 33 RPM.
Mine's at Mariah Rose Wimmer.
And we'll be back next week with another episode.
Thank you for listening.
Thanks. Bye.